Rodea. It's a full term, full year course. I mean, it's now all the way till the end. But of course, if you know anything about the Rodea, you know, three major volumes. And with over 400 simon. There's no way we can even just cover half of that in the amount of time that's allowed to us. So the only way to do it is to skip around a little bit here, a little bit there, and this way we can cover the parts of your day which are important to know, which are practical. To give an example, simon. There's no way we can even just cover half of that in the amount of time that's allowed to us. So the only way to do it is to skip around a little bit here, a little bit there, and this way we can cover the parts of your day which are important to know, which are practical. To give an example, the very first part of your day is about shechita, laws of slaughter, ritual slaughter. You know, here to go into shechita, or to know anything about shechita. We don't know anything. We buy. The only thing we know is, well, it's the OU Shechita, or the Satma Shechita, or the Babbage Shechita, or the Baltimore Shechita. That's all we know. But we don't know anything. We rely on other people. If they hope that the Shechita that they provide for us is kosher. It doesn't pay for us to learn about Shechita, right? What's the point? Next is about traitors. The whole time is, you know, the building. Remember the whole issue with the older stomach here? So you and I are going to decide who's right. We rely on the various kashrus agencies. They say it's good, if it's no good, it's no good. It doesn't relate to us directly in the home. It doesn't at all. So therefore, I don't think we're going to spend any time with that either. Okay? So we're going to try to begin the Yerodeya from the part that's relevant to us. And I'd like to ask a question, the answer to which will determine exactly, precisely where we should begin. That the next halachos, after you finish the laws of Shechita, and after you finish the laws of Treifus, the next halachos have to do with what we call Dam. Dam means, we know that an animal has blood in it, and what about permitted to eat blood from an animal? And of course, the way in which a person avoids this is by either salting or by roasting. And the question I want an answer for is this at all relevant to you? Do you have a kasher liver in your house, or chicken in your house, or anything in your house at all, whatsoever? Nothing, ever. Don't. Does anyone serve liver in the house? Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. So it was one person there who seen liver.
And I never ate it in my life.
Okay. A new chavra. Two people? Liver? Wait, three? Oh, yeah? Okay. So people have to know a little bit about these things. So let's learn a little bit. You won't learn too much about it. Just a little bit about it, so in case it comes relevant to you, you know, you'll get married, your husband likes liver, and you'll have to kosher it. So it could be relevant, right? Liver is supposed to be healthy food. I asked my talmidim once about this question. I said that none of them had ever seen liver being kosher now. Do you ever eat liver? You get chopped liver. They buy it at a chop from the store, so again, it's not relevant to them. There are some people who may have to one day cash a liver, it's important to know a little bit about it. I'm going to ask someone to do me a favor, because I couldn't find one before. Get me a Yerodeya Aleph in the library. Is there a library nearby? A Yerodeya Chelek Aleph. To be returned to the first stove. Thank you very much. Right. So let's get some very, very basic facts about salting and kashering meat. Torah says you're not permitted to eat blood. Very serious prohibition. And Torah also says you're permitted to eat meat. The Torah also says that meat has blood in it. So obviously something has to give. There must be a way to remove the blood from the meat. And there are, in fact, I mentioned before, two distinct ways to remove blood from meat. One is called salting, and one is called roasting. The meat that you buy, you go to a butcher shop, it probably says on the outside, all meats soaked and salted. You ever see that anyone here ever walk into a butcher shop? Raise your hand if you walk into a butcher shop. Okay. Ever see a sign, all meats soaked and salted? Because, you know, there used to be, and there still are a few, believe it or not, in today's world, they'll say unsalted meat. And it's, of course, it's unsalted meat, because they're selling a tray for meat, and they're assuming that you're going to kosher it in the house. It's a very poor assumption. But, you know, there are people doing it anyway, because, for whatever reason. And therefore, if these days you go to a reliable butcher shop, it'll say all meats are soaked and salted. Get a little bit of background. You go to a store, you should only go to a store which sells black kosher. Make one statement about what it is and what it really isn't. Black kosher goes back to the laws of trade. Black literally means smooth. And it goes back to the little background over here. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. There are a number of trefos. The trefos means trephus means holes in various organs or other imperfections, which, generally speaking, make the animal doomed to die within a year. The dispute whether that's really the case. There are many, many kinds of trephus. We don't check all the trephus. The reason is, and this is important for other areas as well in kashrus, we consider the incidence of trefus to be less than common, uncommon, unusual to have a trefus. What is the definition of unusual? Very important point. Most posts say definition of usual is 10%. The definition of unusual is less than 10% or more is usual. Less than 10% is considered to be unusual. In Hebrew, the terms are miyutan matsui, a found minority. You can find it, it's around. Or miyashayna matsui, a minority which is so small it's usually not to be seen anywhere. That's how the terms are used. Now, the only one for all the trefus that's matsui is the lungs. Holes in the lungs are matzui. And therefore each and every reliable slaughterhouse has to check holes in the lungs. So, theoretically, glatt means that it's smooth, there's no adhesions, there's no indication that there may be a hole in the lung. Nothing. So glatt, smooth. What happens if there is an adhesion, is an indication? What we have to do is we call, check it out. How do you check it out? It's complicated how you check it out. They make sure that in fact the hole isn't open. There is no hole all the way. They'll peel it away. They may fill up the lung with water. They may see if it'll blow air and see if it comes out. I don't want to go into the details. It's not relevant right now. But it involves a checking procedure. So glatt means, at least in theory, they don't bother checking. If they see some adhesion, they just say they just throw it out. They don't throw it out. They sell it as trade for non-glatt. So glatt is considered to be a higher level of kashrusness. According to some poskim, once these adhesions exist, you're not supposed to look for it, you're not supposed to check it, you don't rely on our test. You're just supposed to throw it out. As a matter of fact, the Sephardic custom is more strict than the Ashkenazic in this case. Initially, the Sephardim are supposed to use only glatt kosher meat. Ganazim are more lenient. Despite this, I tell everyone to buy only glatt kosher meat. Not because we're so worried about glatt as they were, as some authorities were, but simply it's a matter of semantics. When you buy glatt kosher meat today, the likelihood is it's not glatt. The likelihood is that it's at least kosher. If you buy kosher meat which is not glatt, the likelihood is it's not kosher. That's not going to be. Don't ask so many questions. It's just the reality. So you should only buy glatt kosher meat in the hope that it's at least kosher. If you buy plain kosher, not glatt kosher, it's hard to... the way the facts are in America today, it's probably not kosher. either the shechita is substandard, or the bedikah, which means the checking for the drapers is substandard, something is substandard along the way. So therefore, you should only buy glatt kosher meat. I believe that here in the yeshiva, you only have glatt kosher meat. I'm mistaken. Most, for example, most vads in the OU only use glatt kosher meat. Most of the national agencies that you're familiar with, the CUFK, the OK, the STAR-K, use only glatt kosher meat. The vads, the local vads, almost all of them use only glatt kosher meat. Okay, this is the background. Now that the meat is kosher, you have to get rid of the blood. So what do you do? So when you buy meat, it's been salted already. What do you mean soaked and salted? What's it soaked and salted? I'm not going to go into all the details of salt because no one here has ever salted anything. Probably no one here will ever salt anything. But now it's all done in the butcher shop. Your grandmother, your great-grandmother salted all of her meat because the butchers didn't do it in those days. Have you ever seen your grandmother's house? Probably not. Probably never saw salted meat ever. Probably not, no? My mother never salted meat, not to my knowledge. I never saw it. It wasn't done. They already was done in the butcher shop. So the way they do it, the kids are in the grief, and they took the meat, it's cut up, they soak it in water. Then they put salt all over, leave it there for an hour. Then they rinse off the salt carefully, they soak it, they rinse it, the whole series of soaking, rinsing. And then it's kosher. Why? Because salt has the property to be able to draw out blood. So my children sometimes ask me now, what's going on? Let's say we have a steak. Or even chicken. And sometimes I see this red stuff oozing out. Abba's blood! So my response is always the same. No. It's meat juice. It's meat juice. Not called halakhli blood. Once the meat was split and salt for the requisite amount of time, it was washed before and washed after. So that means whatever's left is labeled halakhli as meat juice. It's not called salt. It's not called blood. And if it does not prevent the halakhic problem. Even though maybe it may look red, it doesn't matter. That's one way of what we call pashering meat. The word is pashering. You'll probably never see this. If you want to see it, just go to the local butcher shop and ask them, can I see how you sold the meat? You say, fine, and they can do it, they'll show you how to do it, that's all. Some of the stores you may see may have a sign, we don't use, we don't use opgegossen Fleisch. Never saw that, huh? Or we don't use all meats soaked and salted within 72 hours. Ever see that sign? Oh, somebody at least saw something. But 72 hours bit. The Gaon who came after the Talmud said that if you leave the meat unsalted for 72 hours, so you can't salt it anymore. Because by that time the meat, the blood somehow hardens, it gets somehow so attached to the meat itself that you can't get it out of salt. Although there's no real source for this in the Talmud, it's been accepted by Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. We won't follow that. So we have to salt the meat within 72 hours of the shechita. Now it was possible to do that, especially if the slaughterhouse in the Midwest and you're in New York and the truck can break down, or even if it doesn't break down. So then what they did was they would soak the meat, because the goal instead of you soak the meat within 72 hours, then the clock starts all over again. In other words, let's say for example, you did a shechita, 48 hours later, 2 days later, you did a soaking, so the clock stops again, and 3 more days, you're talking about 5 days from the original shechita before you can do the, and you can still do the salting properly. So some people don't like this process for whatever reason, either because they don't like it, or because they don't rely on it, or they're afraid it's not done properly. They say that when the big car, the train, I don't think it's happening, they pass through certain communities in Pennsylvania on the way from the Midwest to New York, the guy would stand there with a water gun and spritz a little water on the meat's already washed. Washed with the water gun. I'm the water gonna cut it up. Take a huge hose. Then maybe, it's not the same hose. It really says it's supposed to be put into the, actually in the water. Okay, if it's a big hose, you know, maybe dogwood is good enough. But apparently it's a little spritzer. Because the butchers didn't like a lot of water. It wasn't good for the meat. You know, their quality suspected. That's for that reason. Another reason it became considered a proper stringency in communities not to rely on what they call the upgegossen of flesh. Flesh means that upgegossen means it was washed in order to postpone the 72-hour clock from running out. In our community, we also tried very hard not to use the upgegossen of flesh. If the truck breaks down, you know, it can happen once every 5 years. I don't think it's going to happen. So we rely on it. It happened once to me many years ago, where the truck broke down. It came and delivered it on Friday, just before Shabbos, and the time ran out. Sunday morning, it was chef on Thursday morning, and they chef very early. Brought out the chef, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. They're going to be chef. I mean, I'm not sure when it was chef, but they're open. I checked out 6 o'clock in the morning. They're open the street already. Very early, some crazy hours. So I had to go. You're not gonna believe this. I had to go to the butcher shop at 4:30 on a Sunday morning. Anyone within the street was on the way in. You know, it was really pretty deserted. And we had to put the meat into the water to make sure it was on there on time. I didn't trust anybody else. So I had it, and no one else could come, so I had to do it myself. I mean, I had to do it myself. The lawyer was there, but you know, I had to watch what he was doing. So it happened to me once. It doesn't really happen. It's a very rare event, this kind of stuff. Okay. Now, there's another way to kasher meat. When it comes to liver, for example, we don't rely on salt. Liver is so much blood in liver. It's kulo dam, the folks are saying. We don't rely on the salt. We require a roasting process. The roasting process, by the way, works for all meat. You can roast any kind of meat. But people don't like to do it because it forces you to use it to do it in a certain way. So we don't rely on the roasting process as a rule. We don't bother with it. We salt instead. When it comes to the liver, we have to roast it. Roasting means you hold it over a fire. I'm distinct when I was a child. My mother would tell me on a Friday afternoon to hold the liver over the fire. That was my job. It didn't take too much talent. But they'll just sit there and hold the liver over the fire. There I noticed, it's quoted in Poskim, there's a custom. Before you roast the meat, just salt it a little bit. Not the great amount of salt that's needed for the salting process, because every drop covers, every square inch covers with salt. Here, for the roasting, the minute just throws a little bit of salt on it. And we always do the gloves out. Diamond crystal. They don't say that anymore. There's thick salt that they would say, Grubbers out, Salt in the flesh, and they're going to have the on the side. The coarse salt is considered preferable for this purpose. And that means in my youth, if I would sit like a boiling for 15 minutes on a Friday afternoon, and my mother was too busy to stand there, and I'd stand there. And then she'd say, okay, hold it for 10 minutes this way, and I'd turn around, hold it for 5 minutes this way, and then the blood would go down, so it would just sort of fall away. And I remember what we held it on was a grate, which had a piece of metal, big hole between the piece of metal, one vertically and horizontally, and it had two parts. You put the liver here and you close it, like this, and you hold it with your hand, and hold it. That's what we did, and then pretty low tech. So this process requires a girl to hold it for 15 minutes, so I have to pan the neck. So in my house, we do it in some different way. My wife does it, but she does it. Which is that she gets a... See, the problem with the thing is trade. The thing is that because it has blood, so we assume that the implement is trade, we wouldn't use for anything else. So what are you going to do? So she takes a disposable pan, and she takes then, I think she uses another disposable, she has two disposable pans, I'm saying two. One is complete, and one is filled with holes. Holes all over the place, holes. She makes with a can opener, one of those, she makes holes, big holes. And she puts the livers in the holy disposable. disposable. And put the holy disposal into the full disposable with plenty of room between them. One is high and one is a little bit lower. So now the blood can drip through the hole and collect in the full disposable. And she puts it in the broiler section of the oven. You know what that is, the broiler? The bottom, very intense heat, but very hot. Hotter than the top. It's a smaller cavity. You ever see it? People can broil steaks there. You know, that's where she puts it. Leaves it there for until it broils, you know, toxic again, until it makes it edible. And then, there's blood at the bottom. So she throws it out. Doesn't bother because that disposal is just trape anyway. She can dispose of it. She can do it 100 times when she disposes of it. Doesn't matter, no problem. Doesn't impact on what's on top of the next time. So, this way, she can keep using it again and again and again. The top one doesn't become trape because the blood keeps going through the pulse of the same, basically. It has holes, it's called a cleave and nuclear, a cleave with holes, it doesn't become trade because the blood goes down. Ain't no manuka, so the blood gathers, then it becomes trade. Alright? So it becomes trade, there's no financial loss disposable. And you just keep it on the bottom. That's the gizmo she uses to cash a liver. I mean, it's been happening less and less since I had to go on the low cholesterol, it became very infrequent. But I think once in a while, it's cool as it's filled up. Okay? That's the idea of pasturing liver. So if you have the gizmo that I just said, you can use that. Now you can take a regular fork and hold it over the, you know, if you want to kasher, just hold it. I thought I used to kasher on fry, I think all the chicken livers. That's what I think it used to be all the time. Every liver, every chicken has a liver in it. You ever notice that? I'm talking about the chicken has a liver in it, you all know. But that a chicken which is the liver is a trigger for sure, also won't live. But a chicken that you buy, like an Empire chicken, you buy an Empire frozen chicken, have you seen? So after the small print, Empire frozen chicken says, liver, which is in the cavity, must be removed before cooking. That is really, and you can't miss it if you're looking for it. If you're not looking for it, you'll miss it right away. I had a child just last week. I think it was this past Friday, I'm not mistaken. Got a call from the Rav. Guess what? There's a fine teenage young lady who sees how hard her mother is working. She decides to spare herself some of the work and cook the chicken for Shabbos. So she took the chicken out of the freezer, roasted it, put it in the pot, cooked it. It meant very well. As soon as she finished, the mother walks in and finds what? The liver's inside. The liver's inside. And the liver's usually in the plastic bag, so maybe you can say the bag split open, the liver's all over the place. And blood and this, and what do you do with the chicken? So I did the button. I remember when someone called him a Charlotte, the phone on Friday, I yelled out, guess what Charlotte this is? So my son guessed one thing, my daughter guessed another thing, my wife guessed right. It's the shadow of the liver and the chicken. Are you right? How did she know? Because she had the same shadow when she was a Kala. She was my wife, my mother-in-law, had this frozen chicken, but it was out of stuff. She went to the local butcher with a long beard and she bought a chicken and then she, you know, that's how it was. Well, my wife never heard of this frozen chicken story, so my wife's aunt, who was living in the more modern world, you know, after she got married, she came to visit, and she bought this and this and this, you know, aunt brings these really illegal really plants, and she bought some of that Empire chicken. Fuck. So, I remember I had a Rusa who come to learn me every night in the house. So once I was listening, invite a Rusa, let him come, and we'll make him supper. Oh, very nice. So our first guest in the house, and we kept to a married. So, biggest one, my aunt gave her a chicken. I think we got that during Shabbat, bro. She gave him, take a chicken, you know, so. Chicken. Put the chicken in the pot. She's ready to serve the chicken to this distinguished guest of mine, a Rusa. Now a bus of the road. Rosh Hashiva summoned her patrol. And here it is. About to serve it. She says, oh, the liver. What's this? Where did this come from? She didn't know anything about this liver. So then she picked up the wrapper from the garbage and said, remove the liver from the cavity before you cook. But she didn't know anything about this. Kitza gonna throw out the whole chicken. Because the, as we will see soon, the liver is blood, and the blood is absorbed in the rest of the chicken. We don't know how to think of what to do. So my distinguished Chavrusa guest ate tuna fish. She knew what the shadow was. She hasn't forgotten. It's been 3 years. She hasn't forgotten. She gets right, that was the shadow. I've got the shadow time and time and time and time again. The irony is I'm told that most people who buy the Empire chicken with the liver inside throw the livers out. So I asked my Talmidim, you never saw your mother cook the chicken livers, what did she do with it? They all said she threw it out. You see the same thing? Everyone just throw it out. It's about a passion for furniture. I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to say, Empire, take it out, take the liver out, and say, you're trying to rip me off, give me my liver. You should take it out, charge something less, and then sell the liver separately. So the kitchen won't be captured. There should be so much wild pastures. Call up Mr. Empire, Mr. Katz. Call him up and tell him, hey, maybe just stop. There was a time when he was trying to have a front way, have the liver hang out. People should at least know that it's there. But there were problems with the technical problems, that spoiled him. We had numerous complaints that people were, despite the sign, this was happened 1,000 times at least. I think they made trade for chicken, it was a passion problem. The pot, as we'll learn soon. But it is a serious challenge. If for no other reason, then you can, to watch out for it. Okay? All right. Okay, I should add that there's another category you should be familiar with. And that's called, we talk about Dam. There's also two other prohibitions you should know about. One is Gira Noshe, learn about Parshas Vayishlach, right? Yaakov Avinu, the Gira Noshe. And one is Chela, fat. Certain fats are prohibited. You'll say, but I just got a steak, a fatty steak. That's not called Chela. The blood is called meat juice. And the chalav is called shuman. Shuman is a halakhic term which means fat, which is kosher. And the word shuman is fat. But if it's considered halakhic permissible, we call it shuman, not chalav.
Wait, what's the difference?
That's a good question. Hi, what's chalav and shuman? We have a mesorah, we have a kabbalah, we have a tradition to know what's called chalav and what's called shuman. Generally speaking, by Torah law, the chalav is in the back and the shumah is in the front. Now, that's called the hindquarters. Are very problematic to eat hindquarters. In America, we've said to give away all the hindquarters as trade. The mind is, there's nobody in America that tries to make the hindquarters kosher. You have to get out the Gira Noshe. You have to get out the chalav. It's very difficult. In America, you just throw it out. You look, it's such a big non-Jewish population. You sell it as trade. And Eretz Yisrael, not such a big non-Jewish population. So they had the customs, they had from Europe still, to kosher even the, we call the hindquarters. And the word that's used for this quote is traibering. Traibering, I guess the way it's spelled is T-R-A-I-B-E-R-I-N-G. It's a Yiddish term, traibering. It has something to do with the word tarbo, which is Aramaic for fat. It means in the process of taking out the three things. Taking out the fat, taking out the Gira Noshe, which we don't do, and take, because we throw the whole pot out, and taking out the dam. Let me dam, and salt takes out the dam. Salt takes out the dam in the capillaries, which is mostly of the dam evorim, it's called, dam of the organs. But if it's called Vrida Chutei Dam, you're actually veins or arteries, big things which carry dam, it's not enough to just salt it. So therefore, you have to remove it, take it out with a knife. That's for all this is called traitory. We also have traitory. Even though you cut the hind quarters out and throw it away, give it to you. Even the front quarters, no discussion, the 12th rib, the 13th rib, doesn't mean much to us. Where the cutoff point in the front and the back. But even the front part, you have to take certain chalav away, certain blood away. And it's a big, big dispute among the customs, what exactly the proper trade. Different customs. I tried to learn this when I was becoming involved in giving Ashkafa. I failed. I went to a butcher, the guy showed me this, and this, and this, and this, and showed me everything. Because it went in, I just couldn't grasp. I'm a city boy. I'm a city boy, B, I have a very poor sense of spatial relationships. I can't visualize things in my head. went back, spent hours on the time to put it back. Couldn't tell you. Couldn't figure out what's this. So in our place, we get someone in who's an expert to double check on the butchers to make sure the chairman is okay. I can't do it. I tried, but I can't. I don't know how to do it. You don't know. You have to assume you go to the butcher shop, too many trailers. Okay? There should be a no. There was a fight about it a few years ago. You know what they're fighting about. Exactly what's called Kehler, what's called Schumann, where do you have the kasha, the 12th, the 13th rib, all these details are found in the Shulchan Aruch as well. Good. Now, one more halacha, which perhaps is more relevant to you than everything we've discussed until now, as we go along in the Shulchan Aruch in the order, Sin and Samach Gimel. See, we already covered it one day by skipping, we're already into the 60s, okay? The bench where they cover ground is the skip. So there's 400 simon, how do 400 simon in 1 year? But they skip the first 60, it makes it, at this pace, finished by in 3 weeks.
Okay.
Here's a halacha called Bosar Shenis Alei Min Ha'ayin. So the Narav says like this, if strictly speaking by Torah law, if the majority of the meat in town is kosher, and you see meat in the street, you can eat it, call the majority. But, if it's Alei Min Ha'ayin, slipped away from the eye of the Jew, and there was no simon, there was no sign, so we don't eat it. If it's a simon, it's okay. All chickens you buy from the store, by the way, all have what we call a plumb. Anybody know what that means?
Okay.
Empire, like a little metal thing on it, it's an empire, or Galil, or whatever it's called, I don't know what else they have. Different brands. And I'll have it metal, which is, you can't remove. You can remove it, but it's not to be removed until you buy it. Proof to you that it's in fact Empire, not Purdue. How do you know what it is? A&P. That's a plumber, so we know that it's a kosher chicken. So therefore you can send that chicken with a kosher delivery truck. What's the difference? Who cares? I don't care who gets it. As long as it's the plumber or some other sinner, it's okay. What if you do if you're sending meat? Sure, the meat comes with a plumber because it's a slaughterhouse. Big side of beef has a plumber. But you think you order 1 pound steak? No plumber on that. So, the truth is, now that a lot of these are shrink wrapped, you know what that means? You know what that is? There's a plastic wrapping and it's wrapped tight around and it says, Lotmar. Give an example. And it presumably would be impossible for someone else to take that. What are you afraid about? I ordered from Glasgow. And they said it was a non-Jewish, let's say, the non-Jewish truck driver. And he puts it into my house. It says the Glasgow has been around it. Maybe it's not Glasgow. Maybe it's A&P. It has a Glasgow label. So maybe someone else put it on. It's shrink wrap. It looks like what it's tampered with. Bless us, look at this very roughly, then it's almost impossible to get anything else but black moth. And therefore, there's some folks who say it's good enough. I disagree. But the problem is, if you go to a traditional butcher, you sell the meat loose. You may have a plastic bag wrapped around it like the bubba did. Not the bubba adding plastic, but the mama did. But it's not shrink wrap. So maybe it's a guy who took an AMP piece of meat and wrapped it around. And that's all. How do you know? So what you're supposed to do is put the bill on top, put it in a bag, put the bill on top of the local butcher shop, and then staple it in a way in which the has the bill and has the bag in one shot. So if you get the bag closed, you know it must have been untampered with. Where else would this bill come from? The bill must have come from this store. And therefore, all the meat is presumed to be kosher. And once at a shiloh, some had an open bag of meat. It opened up. It's a big problem. Can you eat that meat? Maybe it's different meat. You bought it from a particular store. Maybe that store the sentence with the goy. The goy decided he was hungry, so he ate the meat and put it in the hay and pea meat. Maybe. That's what the Siddur Shulchan Aruch was about. The best thing to do is bring it back to the butcher. There's the butcher, what we call a tvius ayin. I can recognize my meat. A good butcher can recognize the meat. We trust him. We trust him for everything else. We trust him for this stuff. That's the best way to do it. If he doesn't recognize it, then you have a big problem. Big problem. Sure.
What do you? I don't understand this part you're saying. Let's say you go to your butcher and he sells meat, you know, with no shrimp wrap, no nothing. So that would.
If you're in the store, no problem.
So when would you get a meat
delivery? The meat delivery with a non-Jewish delivery, or non-Jewish or non-reliable delivery man. That's the problem. If no one's in the store, no problem at all. Some Bosnians say the only time a Mahmir, a Bosnian in the Talmud, in a Hayin, is only in front of the street. But if Mazal, the Bokum Sheinicho, you put it there, you found it there, there's no problem whatsoever. This is relevant to people that have made. We're going to discuss this topic. It's going to be a recurrent theme, this whole term, made. They cause so many halakhic problems. So you can't imagine how many problems they cause. But one of them is, go to work, not the working woman. She goes to work at 9, comes back at 5, day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out. She has meat in the freezer, the refrigerator. She comes back, I let eat the meat. Both the Solomon and I. There was no Jew watch, maybe there was a 2-month-old baby. A year old baby, there's no supply. And then the non-Jewish shop, there's both the Shinna Solomon and I. I'd eat that meat. So there are more folks accustomed to rely on the linear view. If it is where you found it, so we assume that it's permissible. I don't agree to this, but apparently it's the custom which we have to eat this meat despite the fact that it was left alone with a non-Jew for 8 hours or more. The question was become, would that apply to our case? Not so likely, because our case would be food for the butcher shop to help. You could argue it's in the same bag, it's probably in the same bag. You could argue this way, you could argue that way. It's arguable whether this is really acceptable. Whether it's acceptable or not, some say yes, some say no. Not so simple. Can we hand up somebody? Yes. 1 second, turn around for a second. Nah, that's not a problem. It has to be that you can dip in and out of time. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But turn around for a second, that's not going to happen. That's not a non-kosher. cut the strips down on the yolk, where you can examine. So you may see in some of the cakes that you buy, see the shashon that says, Mie efenin alein aleia. That's what happens in Yiddish. Yeah, yeah. But they say in English, we open all eggs ourselves. We're trying to say that they check every egg from blood. Blood that's grown out. As opposed to some of these, you know, not so scrupulous cakes that these buy eggs, you know, on the we open up all eggs ourselves, you know, but anyway. Yes?
I heard recently that because of the high quality of eggs in America, if you find a blood spot, it's not. It has nothing to do with fertilization. You can flick it out and use the rest of the egg, or at least throw out the yolk and use white.
Okay. That cycle gives our emotion functioning different cycles. The growth has equal emotion. But you said that today, all of the eggs that come to market have been candled, lighter, they call it, they put it behind a light, and they see through it somehow or other. If there's any fertilization, they can detect it, and they put it away. Therefore, our eggs are guaranteed not to be fertilized. The blood is just a maca, a wound. And you can, if you said correctly, you can flick out the blood and eat the rest of the egg. And there are some who say, come on, there are a bunch, can you eat the blood too? But all right, let's not get too carried away. I'll take issue with that. I think everybody was right. I thought PK, if you see blood in an egg, there's those who throw it anyway. I don't know. It's sort of a daycare. You know, that's how used to that above used to do it. But in my mind, if such a bunch is right, there's no need to check the egg so carefully. Check. See it. If you don't see it, you just use it. Tell you another story. I remember this was back when I was a chassid, like a long time ago. So my in-laws, or my future in-laws, came to the yeshiva. They came to Washington Heights. They went to eat what they call, they still call it the greasy school. Now people must want to find out. Roadie, what's that? I don't know what they're doing. It used to be called Sid and George. My father called it Harry's. In the 30s. But the medical ghoul, but the greases remain constant. Same grease in the 30s. They went to the greasy school to said, buy lunch? What? Buy lunch? I probably ordered tuna fish on the time, but I know myself. But someone wanted to order a scrambled egg. So the guy behind the counter, I can see it on my leg yesterday, takes an egg, breaks it on the side of the pan, and puts it in. I'm not sure if it was my boss or almost faint on the spot. I was killed over. What they want? What did he do wrong? The chef said, what do you want? He didn't check the blood. Apparently the way to do it is, you crack the egg, you go like this. You know, like half of this, and 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 you put it in the pan. And he didn't do it. So, wow. I don't do it either. Because, since I'm a bishop, I don't even need to do it. Even if you found the blood, it's really kosher, extremely speaking. I guess the greasy spoon holds, like a bunch. And others don't. So it's different customs. How to how the camera to be about the blood of the egg. Just the information, where it comes from. This is Sama 12. This is Shabbat 66. By the way, your own blood is also awesome for Rabbanim. Blood from your gums bleed, like a bicycle, a piece of bread, or an apple, and guess what? You see blood on the apple and the bread. Now you got to scrape it away. You have blood. It's not really your prohibition, but it's from our Zion. It looks like you need blood. You got to scrape it away. Yes?
So, if we start pushing, once we have a sample, then should we find blood?
What's
the blood when it's not
for a womb. I don't know what you mean.
I'm
just
something that
is
alive.
I guess it can. I don't know. Yeah. Right. You have blood in your mouth that leaves your mouth, then it's no marasite, because someone looks into your mouth. Once it gets out to an apple or a piece of bread, then the marasite kicks in. Okay. Oh, I got one thing. We mentioned before that two things. We mentioned before that you have 3 days. Remember that back to the soak again. What's irrelevant to you? Who cares 3 days? What's the difference? 3 days? What's the difference? You don't soak anything anyway. When it comes to roasting, you roast even after 3 days. Shiloh is, if you roast it after 3 days, are you allowed to subsequently cook it? The Shulchan Aruch says no. So once you waited 3 days, you can't salt it at all. You can't rely on salting it for 3 days. You have to do what? You have to roast it. And not only that, but once you roast it, you can't cook it again. You have to eat the roasted steak. You can't cook it. You can't add anything else into it, etc. The big shaila is, what about liver? What about liver? If you have liver, and you did not salt it within the first 3 days. Excuse me, you did not roast it in the first 3 days. You roast it after 5 days, after a week. Who cares? What's the difference? You roast, you know, you're not salting it. You then cook it. You saute it with onions, and you put it on, what else over there? Put it with eggs? With fresh liver, the liver of an animal. You may insist that your butcher should roast it within 3 days of the shechita. Some butcher shops have a sign, all liver is roasted within 3 days, within 72 hours of the shechita. And you can saute it for sure. Other butcher shops don't say that. Then the question will be whether you're allowed to saute it or not after the 3 days pass, after you roast it. You did roast it within 3 days. Once 72 hours pass, then salting doesn't work at all. Roasting may work only to a limited extent. It's not so clear. So therefore, it's not so clear how much the roasting works. So we say that it's better not to cook after. Because then the roast will take care of all the meat right now. Cook it, start stirring up the water, that's again, make all the problems. Once 72 hours pass, then salting doesn't work at all. Roasting may work only to a limited extent. It's not so clear. So therefore, it's not so clear how much the roasting works. So we say that it's better not to cook after. Because then the roast will take care of all the meat right now. You cook it, start stirring up the water, that's again, and make all the problems. No, not better, because cook it, what do? You take the blood from here, moving it to there, from here to there, from here to there. That makes it worse. Supposedly you didn't cook it, so whatever the roasting took out, it's a gap. Whatever's left inside, I left the one back. Whatever's left inside, a piece of meat is considered permissible. Well, dam a garbage to low period. Low didn't move. That's why, strictly speaking, I can believe this. You're allowed to eat raw meat. Eat raw meat? Why? Because although there's blood in there, you should salt it, since you didn't come out, called the low fever input. How do you like that? Whatever's in the meat, didn't come out of the meat, it's not considered halachic equivalent. It's a long story, it's complicated. But that's, for that reason, the cooking makes it somewhat worse. Some say it's put in the cold gap for you, roast there for 3 days, and some say it's off. That's issue number one. Maybe the issue number two, which led to this as well, is what if the meat is frozen? You put the meat in the freezer. Does this stop 3 day clock? Anybody have been in there to throw? What's the word for it? Basar? Kafui. Hey, Bob, you, Kafui, but it's frozen. What frozen meat? What are they fighting about? Fighting about? No idea what they're fighting about. This is what they're fighting about. It was frozen. Trapped in Argentina. And the butchers don't want the salt in Argentina because that's going to lose its quality over there on the boat. So they shafted in Argentina, they put it right into the freezer, and froze it for 2 weeks in the boat. The commissary was thrown, and they thought they shared, and they sold it immediately. Is that considered good or no good? Some say yes, it's good. Because when it's frozen, the clock stops, everything is deep freeze, nothing happens. Others disagree, they know what it means. Who said? This is another major dispute, whether you rely on that or not. Aram HaShulchan is lenient about both of these matters, about the custom of food lenient, and about the delivery lenient, and it's basically the both is, look, the whole 3 day story is not found anywhere in the Gemara. Just hint to that perhaps, it knows later students here, they go, oh, they, so we don't apply whatever this dispute whether it's done. Okay, any questions? I'll take it now. Yes?
What about last time? On these two matters?
Because the whole 3 day story is not found anywhere explicitly in the Talmud. The whole idea of 3 days is only a later trilogy produced by the Gaonim. The Gaonim was after the Talmud was already edited and sealed. Since the entire trilogy is somewhat questionable, so we don't apply it whenever there's a doubt about it.
For the
golden,
there was no time limit.
Right, it's sold after a week, after 2 weeks, 3 weeks, never a problem. Okay, the next thing on it, talk about what is a kosher species. So it sounds like everyone knows the two simonim, it has to have a chew its cud and have what? Little. That's all. And it applies not only to the animal itself, but it also applies in the kind of animal. Okay, milk. Milk from a cow is kosher, milk from a pig is not kosher. It can apply to all other things come from the animal. What about bees, honey? How do we eat bees, honey? Comes from a bee tray. How do you do it? How do you know this? Bees, honey should be tray.
They extract it from somewhere else. They don't
really. Oh. Okay. It's not coming from them directly. Okay. That's probably the reason. What about kosher birds? Kosher birds, there's no similar to the Torah itself. Torah tells you what's non-kosher, and everything else is assumed to be kosher. Nowadays, however, we only eat birds based on what we call a besorah, besores, on a tradition. On the kosher shema uvat. You don't eat anything unless yesh besorah shebosla mi'aloseyem. There are many individuals who will not eat turkey. Period. Ever. Only turkey. We have no tradition about turkey. You know what they kind of really call turkey in Hebrew? Anyone else? Kind of hodl. Hodl, where'd that come from?
The Indians.
Right. But
American.
American, that's right. It was New India was American. Turkey is a New World bird. Europeans never saw it before 1492. Columbus brought it to Turkey. The problem is of the country, no tradition of Turkey. There are many people who say turkeys are not kosher. They won't eat it. How do we eat turkey? You assume it's a while, it's really a cousin of the chicken.
Then
why do you eat it? I don't know why. I eat it too, but it's I tell you, I'm not level to say that it's all that possible. I eat it myself. But I want it sometimes. Turkey food is the same as chickens.
Is it the same?
I don't know. That's the only basis on which you can eat it. Because we have no misora on turkey.
How can you expect
to
have
misora
on turkey?
So you can't expect to have a misora, so you shouldn't eat it. Then it says, further than that, it's really bad news. If you don't know, the Shulchan Aruch says, Kol ov shu doreis v'ochel yadua shminim atmeim. What does doreis v'ochel mean? Predator. A bird that, you know, will stomp on its prey and kill it and eat it. That we know for a fact is an ov tomei. So, of course, our turkeys don't do that. No problem. Somebody told me, I don't know if it's true or not, that our turkeys don't do it because they were trained not to do it. The original turkeys, when the turkeys run loose, they'll do it again. And it's even more nervous about turkeys. What kind of nervous these turkeys are? Actually, I say it's awesome, and everyone says, what? They'll laugh me out of town. One of those things that everybody says Muslims, I guess it must be Muslims. But it's a spot I don't think. Anybody have a spot? No? Something that's found only turkey.
I'm sorry.
Are we turkey? Ask the rabbi. Ask the rabbi why you're turkey. Who's your rabbi?
In LA, out of
Dubai. Ask him. Ask him about turkey. Alright. Now we're moving right along to Pei, now it's Pei Bei, now Pei Gimel. Pei Gimel is about fish. Fish, we know it's fish, thank God, no problem. Scales, fins. Alright, scales is good enough, we got no, as long as you see scales, you know for sure that fins. You see scales is good enough, no problem. You go into a store and they want to sell you fish, hired on kosher, they tell me a great fish, let them scale it for you. You know what scales look like? No? A little bit? Scales, no? It looks like fingernails, but it looks like, scales, you know, scales on?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means I scale the kosher. No problem. That is a major issue about fish. Big fight, too. Oh, tremendous, unbelievable battle. Can you eat tuna fish? No one denied the fact that tuna fish is a kosher species that has plenty of scales. That's not the issue. The problem is that the OU get a stuff on tuna fish, on far away plants, and there was not a mashgiach to see every single fish. He didn't check every single fish. There were those who maintained that if the mashgiach didn't see every last tuna fish, then all the tuna fish is great. Maybe it's a different fish. The dolphin. You know the whole tuna with the dolphin? Because in the net, there's a dolphin. I don't eat tuna, they're eating dolphins. Something else. No. Seems to me.
Maybe a rogue is tuna.
I don't eat.
A rogue with the fish they catch.
That's not going to help rogue. You want to make sure that the dogs are. Sakhar Barnum said that if you can't eat tuna fish, that's what we call ashkamba tamidis. So, I believe it's seasons to have on it tuna fish that empty. Empty stands for mashkiach tamidi. Empty mashkiach tamidi. Who supposedly sees every single fish. I find it somewhat hard to believe. But apparently they say it's every single fish. Bumblebee and seasons and well, dog is also much good. All the regular brands, what are they called? Starkist, Bumblebee, what else is there? Probably Chicken and Sea. All this is not much gear for me. Well, they know. There's not much gear to me. I eat it. Well, if you know how the plan works, the tuna fish plants work, you can be guaranteed that the fish you eat is a tuna fish. Even those who claim that they catch dolphins, they found dolphins in the nets, they threw them out. No one ever saw a dolphin in the plant. On the boat, they found a dolphin, they threw them out. The dolphin rights people are angry. The dolphin killed, not killed, they wounded them. Animal, fish rights, okay? No one ever saw a dolphin in the plant. Because in the plant, they're very, very careful only to have kosher, only to have tuna. They're very careful to divide it in different types. One is a skipjack, that's right next. Skipjack tuna, and then they don't call it, called skipjack tuna, and then there's another thing. Oh. Other thing skips my mind. I'm not going to skipjack. It's called. Yeah, different kind of tuna. So they're very careful not to mix up this with that and that with this. They're very medactic in the factory. So therefore, they have people watching all the time with quality control. So the Mashgiach makes an unannounced appearance. He walks into the plant when he doesn't know he's coming. He checks the plant every single time he checks the plant. There was never anything in the plant but tuna fish. We're 100% sure that it's tuna fish. So those who are strict, it doesn't matter, 100% sure. If you didn't see it, it's no good. You have to see every single fish. I don't know, I think it's a very big stringency. I don't think it's going to require. My guess is that even with the MT, they don't see every last single fish. But okay, you can't hurt, it's better. But, I will eat any OU tuna fish as well. You can also see it in the seeds that says MTBY. Have you noticed it? Have a look. Everybody sees the tuna, look. MTBY. Want to get a guess for this one? What, Pace Yaakov? Not bad. Good guess. Not Pace Yaakov. What is it? Does anybody know? Nobody? Bishul Yisroel, as opposed to a problem we call Bishul Akal. We'll get to that in the next 5 minutes of the other day. Bishul Akal is cooked by a non-Jew, that's no good. So BY is Bishul Yisroel. We'll get to later how what do the OU do? They don't have a guy there. They don't have a. How they get around the Bishul Akal problem? We'll discuss that down the road. Okay. Hey, Dallas. We're making slow but steady progress. Okay, now talk about bugs. Oh, now we're really close. Bugs. So, bugs are prohibited. Bugs, worms. Anything which is visible to the naked eye is prohibited. As opposed to what can only be seen under a microscope. If you can only see it under a microscope, it doesn't count. I'll be a lump, it's not zero. It doesn't count. It's significant. Water has bugs. Anyone in a bio lab? Anybody? Next time, take a cup of water, look under your microscope. See a whole bunch of floating things there. But look at this, you can't see it through the naked eye. The problem with vegetables today is that they have little bugs. You look at it, you can't see it. If someone's trained, they'll play out of fun. That's the problem. So it is a little to the naked eye, the trained naked eye, not to the untrained naked eye. That's a major problem. In our house, we're very careful when it comes to Erev Pesach. One of my sons stayed for hours and hours and hours and hours checking the what? Romaine lettuce. Make sure there are no bugs. Somehow we assume there's more bugs in romaine lettuce than in regular. It's true. So he checks and checks and checks. He's very good. He's very conscientious. He looks in a good light. With everything. And what does he find? He bugs. I assume he catches every last one. I have to assume that way. So then, we have a big status. He checks 3 heads of lettuce and 10 frogs in a second. The 3 or 4 heads of lettuce, he finds 3 or 4 bugs, that's all. 10 bugs. So the question is, are you required to check every single leaf of lettuce in order to look for bugs under such circumstances. It's going to shock you. In my opinion, the answer is no. The doctor spoke about before. So the miyut she'eino matzui, less than 10%. The big question, how do you define 10%? 10% of what? I thought it's 10% of my bite, strictly speaking, it should be 10% of every bite. I take a bite. Is there a 10% chance of a bug in this bite? Some lettuce? The answer is no, sure not. But it should be mutter. You don't like every bite, you want to eat every serving. What's a serving of lettuce? I don't know if he's eating salad. He's eating a filter fish. Look, you know, they put some lettuce, which is going to control the fish. So how is the serving? It's 1 leaf. 2 leaves. Well, how much? Not so much, right? In my opinion, even that could be a chen of mutter. Even the 2 leaves, that is the 1 bite. Even the whole leaf, even the 2 leaves. It's likely it to be a mere chen of mutter. By the way, it's only if you buy gray A lettuce. You have to buy gray A lettuce. If you buy B, C, D, infested all over the place. Very important. So the top quality lettuce. Even better, I recommend to buy the pre-wash lettuce called Dole. Dole pre-wash lettuce. They sell you for extra money. And it's even less likely to have any bugs. Even better, if you can afford it, is Boden. Boden, they do a better job. They wash it even better than Dole does. The whole article of papers back and forth a few months ago, remember that? Somebody found a bug in Bodex. They paid $10 for a head of lettuce on the boat. They responded by saying, listen, mister, before Bodex washed it, then it was you probably infested with bugs. Now that Bodex washed it, there's not so many bugs. It's once in a very long while. That's why you had a right to charge with an leg for Bodex. My opinion is, they don't know right. Because even before they washed it, it was washed by Mr. Dole, charged 1/3 of the price, or was not washed even at all, it's going to grade A, it's a mere chain of mutter. It's less than 10%. All right, so it's not washed at all, so it's less than, we'll call this frog and take 9%. Still mutter. And if it's washed, we'll say it's down to 2%. Bone it down to 1%. It's all very nice. I'm happy that they make it lowering and lowering it, but I'll be a lookup. It's really the same thing. Once it gets down to beneath 10%, I don't think it's difference between 9 or 3 or 2. Maybe 1 is better. Just about 60, if it may have relevance, it may. I think I've got 1 in 60 there. Kids, in my opinion, you know, to check, I saw one of the books in summer, someone had a book called Hilchos Tolon by Rabbi Binyamin Young, no, Rabbi Yoel Schwartz, Yerushalayim. Big joint, big time of thought. He writes it. One of the footnotes, you know, which should follow more than a logical analysis, 10% cutoff, and all of our vegetables are really should be butter without checking. You mean to tell me that our vegetables are butter without checking? That can't be! So he gives a dray, trying to figure out why it should be awesome. That's why it can't be. Why can't it? It is. It is butter. You want to check, but I don't think it's really required to want it out. You'll tell them you're eating bugs. How can I stand here in front of you? Say, you don't have to check it. I'm inevitably going to eat a bug somewhere down in your career. So how can I allow that? I gave you an answer. If you eat meat, you are inevitably going to be eating something crazy. Drink milk, the same thing, even more certain. How do you drink milk? Maybe the animal is a traitor. Like a fanuka from Bnei Brak. Whatever, you're still going to check the cow. Check the traitor. Sound good? Getting new lettuce, you check the car right away. We'll call it Kolo. That's what we call it. Kolo. Kolo. Suduka. Kolo of an animal should go, but as soon as she's doing great milk, you check it, you check it. $10 is a coin. Nope. I haven't seen it even in Charo Park. I haven't seen it. So what happened? What's the answer? You're lying to the majority. We're allowed to rely on the majority, and most animals are not trade for. And since you can't check it each time, so you're allowed to rely on the majority, even though it's not a 90% majority. So I said, look for every time you want to milk a cow, put it through an MRI. Cat scan. Cat's no problem. Cat's looking up all the traces. You can do it, just keep looking. There's another cat scan. It costs about $10,000 for the cat through a cat scan. No problem. Do what he said. Look at the color. Call a cat scan. I don't know. Call MRI. I haven't been able to write either. The answer, I don't think we can do that. It's crazy. So too, it seems to me, strictly speaking, that will be able to look for the garbage either, as long as you know. And you gotta look a little bit, you see right away. But as long as you know that it's not infested, then although there may be a bug here, a bug there, you don't like eating bugs, but you're not going to be able to check each and every leaf, it seems to me. Even though you're also going to need to end up eating bugs, so you're also eating trade from drink, trade from milk too. There's no better design. You rely on the majority. Sorry, I said you rely on the majority. Something wrong with the PLO. I don't get the panic of the new bug revolution that came out now, the new bug standards, the bug guidelines, the bug. I don't go crazy about it. But I'm told there's some vegetables that are completely infested. What is it, Brussels sprouts as well?
Yeah.
That's what I read. That's true, you can't eat it. I agree. Lettuce not always infested, that's what I know. Lettuce could be broken, could be not broken. My son checked with romaine lettuce and played very thoroughly. And he didn't find so many bugs, and icicles lettuce is even better. The minute you throw out the outside couple of leaves, kind of the outside few leaves are the ones that are the most buggy. You throw out the outside ones, and the rest you can eat. Yeah.
What
about artichokes? Could be as infested, I don't know. Broccoli, something like that. I don't know every detail. I just don't know. Yes?
Now, iceberg lettuce, so you throw out the outside and the inside, because the
milk will help you
get
vinegar,
so
you have a narrow. Yeah, I think it'll help. You put it in water. So now you're changing the ego. Necessary? Someone told me if you put the stuff in vinegar or in water, it becomes so schwach. It becomes like whippy. That's what that means exactly. You don't want to stir anything, was that true?
Not water. Water makes it harder, but vinegar.
Water makes it harder, yeah? We'll also make it shrivel. I don't know what to do about the kitchen. No? It's not interesting, but if that's the case, well, what we do in our house, we basically work. We're actually eating bugs. Don't make a mistake. We're not a habit of bugs. But if you rinse it, you soak it, you wash it, you don't check every last little leaf. Without any bugs. I'll tell you a secret. After you check it, it's the leading bugs. After all the check, even Bodek, they rinse it so well, it's the leading bugs. They narrow. I don't think people believe it's to narrow as much as you can. I don't think it requires this one. Once you have an even, do we get that much? Threshold, 10%. You want to check bed? You want to put water, vinegar, check oil, and put the dishwasher in the dishwasher? No objection. That's what is required for this thing. Hello? Thank you. Now we come to the first major topic of this year, which is gossip culture. Ah, what's all real device. Everybody knows you're not permitted to eat milk and meat together. Alright, everyone knows that? By Torah law, it said, who knows the verse in the Pasuk three times? I've got low, so Vashel, Kediva, Halevino. Let's say it out of here. But it's not a cooking. There's three times. So the rabbi explained three times. One is that you're not allowed to cook it. One, you're not allowed to eat it. And one, you're not allowed to have benefit from it. Three things. No Achila, no Hano, and no Bishop. All three. Since the expression of bishul is used, by Torah law, the only time it's prohibited is if you cook it. You cook meat and milk together, then it's prohibited to eat by Torah law. If someone else cooks meat, cooks it together, you may not eat it by Torah law. If you cook it, you eat it, you violate rule three, right? Someone else cooked it and you eat it, you're only violating Bishul and Hanah. Like, excuse me, Achila and Hanah. Someone else did the Bishul. He violated it. Goy did it. No one violated it. That's by Torah law. Of course, by rabbinic law, it's always us. Always us. But, the big difference. Whatever is us is only by rabbinic law. So there are more in the very first paragraph, the first two paragraphs about. It's only us about Achila and not by Hanah. The two extremes is we call Basa B'cholim in HaTorah, which is also Ba'achila Ba'anoa with Bishul. Once you do a Bishul, it's also Ba'achila Ba'anoa by Torah law. If you do not do a Bishul, then, or for some other reason why it's only rabbinic, then it's only also Ba'achila, not the Bishul and not the Ba'anoa. He doesn't only mean a goat, but any kosher species. But if the non-kosher species, there's no prohibition of basar b'chol. I say it's a small comfort. Why? There's no need for basar b'chol. It's not kosher. I take horse meat, I cook it with butter, or milk, so there's no basar b'chol. Mazel tov. But if it's not kosher, the horse meat itself is not kosher. Do what's the answer? What? I know. If it would be at least a basar b'chol, it would be also the Hanah, also the Bishul. Now that it's no basar b'chol, so you can have Hanah from it, and you can do Bishul, I just can't eat it because of the horse being intrinsically non-kosher. Here's a major issue. Very serious shout out to someone. Someone who came had a hamster. Yes, I kid you not. A hamster. And he had dog food to give to the hamster. So one fine day, he reached for the dog food. And said, oh, you want dog food now? Because it said there it had meat and it had milk. And the meat wasn't about kosher. It wasn't kosher. But it was likely for kosher species. What do we call that? Meat which is for kosher species but not properly slaughtered. What do we call that? The Vela. Major dispute. What's the status of the Vela concerning Basar B'chol? So, obviously it's also about Vela. Obvious. Bishul is prohibited. Can't cook it. What about Hanah? So the Rambam says there's no prohibition of hanocha. The Rambam writes, dog food is what about hanocha. How do you have to say dog food? Dog food is what about hanocha. And others say no, dog food is also about hanocha. Here's a shout of dog food, I have guilt. Can I use it to my dog or not? So I told the person to call up the company, find out number one, what kind of meat it is, and number two, what's the ratio of feed to milk. So I didn't find out until after the summer that they called up, and it was from a kosher species, a cow meat or something like that. But you know what? It was good about enough. You know why? The milk was less than 1/60 of the meat. When it says also vashel, they're official, it means they have to give taste from one to the other. They have to give taste to one another. And here, the milk is less than 1/60 of the meat, the amount of taste is insignificant. It's what's called bottle decision. And therefore, there is no prohibition. It turns out that the meat was permissible to give to the dog or the hamster. Eat a lot of meat and milk, there's a ratio. Again, according to the Rambam, the butter is 3%. No. According to others, the severe drops, perhaps Tosfos and others, then it would be a prohibition. And Chasam Sofer says it should be strict in this matter. It's less than 1/60th, and you're okay. Baruch Hashem, the dog food was less than 1/60th. You should put a sign on the label. Milk less than 1/60th. I wonder what the grave will think. But it'll help us sell. It was Stern College dog food. Hart's Mountain. You know what that is? I never heard of it. This is the Max Stern, part of the group who went to the school in name. His parents' TV table money for school. Here's the original Midwest pet food. It's called Hart's Mountain. Hart's Mountain pet food. Still exists. It was a Wayu pet food. You have to patronize our donors. You have to shop at Sims, and you have to buy a pet food by Hart's Mountain. And beer, we can help give business when they help buy a sheep. I don't have any pets. If I had a pet, I'd buy Hart's Mountain. I'm happy to report this one was less than 1/60. So I'm not sure if it's Max Stern. This is on it, or it just happens that way, I can't answer that question. But apparently it's okay. What about chicken and milk? So chicken and milk is prohibited rabbinically with the Rabbanim. Most of the mashals, only by mammals, if there's a mother, like produces milk. In the bird kingdom, there's no kind of milk. And therefore, if you take chicken and fry it with butter, cook it with butter, it's not considered to be in the category of basar b'chalav by Torah law. Rabbinically, as you well know, it's prohibited, but it's only prohibited by Mila and not the Mishnah of Anna. Okay, so the next dog food happens to use a chicken, that's no problem. It's possible. Okay. What about milk from other sources?
Sure.
You're
saying that
chicken
and milk
cook
together, but does that
mean it's just
the oven?
Absolutely true. You're part of the trade. You can't eat it. Part of the trade. I don't recommend this. I'm just saying, in theory, you're going to be cooking together. It would be a violation of mission. What if you had milk from a different source? Not meat and not. They're built from a completely different source, not from a cow. Comes from what they call shkeda. What shkeda mean? Almonds. Or they were talking about cacaos. What's cacaos? Coconut. Absolutely part of course. It has nothing to do with the milk. Nevertheless, there are more rights. The custom was when they would make the milk from the shkeda, the Amish, they would use it with chicken, but not for red meat. Only the chicken, which is Rabbana. And if they wanted to use this we call parva milk, together with red meat, what do? You put in the skin, you put Amish there. Why? Because the virus iron. What is the virus iron? Because it's a perfect female. What does virus iron mean? Literally, virus membrane, aleph, yud, suf, all iron, A, iron, yud, nun. What does virus iron mean? What does it mean?
Bad
eye. It appears to the eye to be prohibited. It appears to the eye to be prohibited. What are you doing over here? You're taking milk and having it with meat, which is crazy. If you put the almonds next to the milk, everyone understands it's part of the milk, but does not constitute a problem. That's the custom. Today, we have a lot of parva milk running around. We have coffee rich, right? And all these kinds of things. There are many imitations thereof. When I was growing up, when coffee rich was new, brand new, hit the market, the cups for the Rabbana was to insist, went to a bar mitzvah or a wedding, and it was coffee rich, they left it in the coffee rich container. Imagine you're in the Hilton, super fancy, utensils, everything is super gleaming, sparkling, fancy as you can get, and then there's a cardboard coffee rich on the table. God. But the rabbis insisted on it because they were afraid they'd let me put that milk into a fancy pitcher. People would not realize that it's parva, it would be a maritime question. It was a place you go to eat dinner and not a serving coffee with milk, and I got terrible. It seems to me that today is no longer required. Because today, parva milk is so popular. It's so popular that everyone understands now that it's parva. I don't think it's a problem at all nowadays. This I disagree with a very great Tom and Papa. His name is our Bible Cohen, Shalita of Brooklyn, New York, Flatbush. He writes in his sefer called Bavli HaShulchan on Yerodea. And even though nowadays parva milk is very commonplace, still he feels that someone serving parva milk in a inflation of meal with everyone having red meat should have some kind of a simon, leave it in the container, leave the container nearby, some kind of indication that it comes from a parva source. I don't think it's required anymore nowadays. It's so common. It's all the time. You're not going to be more than I was saying. Yes? Yeah. How do you know? Doesn't. You do the coffee. Yeah, that's what I'm always. You know what I'm looking for? Ice cream. Parva ice cream. Everyone's parva ice cream today. No? Everybody has parva. I never heard of put it out in the container. Now what happens if you, it's homemade, you have to de-stand the container, you made the ice cream 3 weeks before you under. You have to hold onto the container so you can show your guests that comes from a parva container. I never heard of it. I wonder what the Rebbe Cohen does. I have to go call up. Go get some invited to the Rebbe Cohen's house in Flatbush. You live in Flatbush, no? Get invited and ask, do you have any parva ice cream here? And see if she serves it. That container. Ah, but your husband said he can't do this. Most probably told you so. I'll get in trouble. So, this is a dispute whether you require this kind of a marking nowadays. It's a big dispute. Big, not like this. I think you can make those in the shower.